Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. Starting a special new series today. You'll remember it as the Expectations series from last year, where we discussed two players. Joining me for the first one is our good friend, Josh Reed. Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing great, kid. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure, my friend. And we're going to talk about two players, one of whom is definitely going to have a very significant role for this team, and the other who it might be good or it might be bad for the Ravens if, honestly, he has a big role for the team. But Kyle Hamilton is the first guy we're going to talk about. We'll also talk about Salah. I'll let you pronounce his full name since he's from up in your neck of the woods.
Yeah. Masala Alamubai Laiulu. He's up from, he's born and raised in Palmer, Alaska, moved out of Alaska when he was after his freshman year of high school, and was on the fast track to Division I football after a brief stint in JUCO.
Okay. Well, let's talk about Salah first. I think he's the aperitif here for what people are really want to discuss in terms of how Hamilton will be used this year. But Salah, right tackle at Oregon. We have not seen a lot of him as we expected to. We're kind of, in a way, I think, hoodwinked by Harbaugh and the coaching staff to think that he would be in strong competition for the starting spot. Had seemed to have the lead out of the gate by being installed at left guard during OTAs last year, approximately this time. And then things really started to go wrong for him during the preseason.
Yeah, I mean, they really kind of threw him in deep end in a sense, you know, his rookie year. And I wouldn't say Harbaugh kind of backtracked with some of that this year, but, you know, he kind of expounded on, like, you know, OTAs is a time where you want to get everybody reps, see how this guy does, see how this guy does. So you see a lot of guys playing out of position, a lot of guys who don't normally run with the ones, you know, running with the ones. You know, this is also a time of the year where a lot of veterans, as we see with Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry, some guys just don't show up for a few days. So you'll get those young guys who get those reps and the coach will see him play there and see him play there. For a guy who was really a career right tackle in college and in Salah, they wanted to see how he did at left guard. And he played a little bit of right guard at Oregon, but not a whole lot.
Yeah, left guard. The Ravens have certainly made a lot of average athletes into good pullers from left guard. So it's not, you know, James Hurst and Bradley Bozeman played there, of course, and they both had really large pulling loads, larger probably than any left guards in the league when they played. And so it's something that the Ravens have been very good at. But Salah certainly, you know, in terms of what I saw, I thought a lot of the prognostication out of the gate during OTAs was just, it was off the cuff crapola, frankly, in terms of who he really was. But he's a kind of a slow-footed guy. He did not honestly use his arms all that effectively either in 2023, certainly in the preseason. But a guy hopefully the Ravens can make into an effective lineman the way they have many over the years that don't start out great in their first year.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy, if you watch his tape in college, like, you know, he may not be the most fleet of foot, but he moved pretty well in space. I mean, as a puller, even from, like, the tackle spot, I mean, the guy gets out in space and he's like a freight train out there. So he's a guy I could definitely envision as a guard, as a pulling guard, you know, lead blocking on some of those gap screens of power runs. So he's definitely somebody that the Ravens saw something in and really liked and felt like they fit their mold. Because, like, as much as people want to, you know, differentiate between the Roman and the Monken scheme, you know, the Ravens kept a lot of those Roman concepts. I mean, that was kind of the deal when Todd Monken was more like, hey, we want to modernize this offense, but we also want to keep what really works for our offense. And he's like, this at our core, we're still a run first team. And a guy like Salah still kind of fits that mold of the kind of lineman that they like and envision in this blocking scheme.
Yeah, I agree. And they not only did they keep a run-first mentality, they used a lot of the same schematic elements that had worked for Roman in terms of counters and you know, using Jackson to basically lead that run game. Obviously, has not changed either, but a lot of the linemen on the move are still evident in Monken's scheme, even with fewer tight ends in play and a fullback on fewer plays. But let's get back to Salah for a second, because he enters 2024 not in any way with the same sort of job opportunity or security he had a last year. Ben Cleveland will be entering year four. I think I would presume he'll be the right guard. I don't know if he's the presumptive right guard, but he's who I'm presuming is going to be the right guard. And then at left guard, I think, you know, there are two guys probably both ahead of Salah right now. Josh Jones They you know, picked up essentially off the scrap heap a guy who has a possible ability to fill in at left tackle. I think that's what they really got him for, hoping that he might be still young enough to take over for Stanley a year from now. But I think he signed for 2 years, but it might be three. I've actually forgotten. And then Andrew Vorhees, who was the big story of the 2022 draft, a guy who they brought in, sorry, the 23 draft, a guy who they brought in as a seventh round pick, acquired that pick from Cleveland. People from the 2006 era, so remembering the Haloti Ngata pick is a similar one in terms of picking that up from Cleveland, liking to stick it to the Browns as often as they can. But Vorhees led all combine linemen in bench reps in 2023.
Yeah, with the torn ACL. I don't know how many of your listeners. I don't know how many listeners out there are familiar with how to bench press, but a lot of it, like some of that power that you use to push that weight off, comes from your legs, even though you're mostly using your arms. But like a lot of times you'll see when guys are pushing off with their chest, they plant their feet firmly in the ground. And if you have 1 foot off the ground, it's like trying to hop on 1 foot off balancing serving trays. It's kind of weird and wonky. And for him to rep out as many reps as he did on the bench press like that was really, really impressive.
That's a good analogy. I just went on a vacation where you did a little bit of kayaking, and I'm not a big outdoorsy guy to start with. So I kayaking kind of makes my face contort into a special way that I know I'm not going to enjoy it a whole lot because of the discomfort of the boat and whatnot. But one of the things we had in these kayaks, which was really made the experience special, and I'm using that air quotes, is they had no back support for the back person in the boat. So naturally, they put Maureen in the front, and I'm in the back. And all of a sudden, I realize I can't. You know, there's nothing to push against when you're paddling. Yeah. And I've got to feel that's the same way as Vorhees on that bench press. But I can tell you, it's incredibly uncomfortable to have to sit up, basically with your legs outstretched, particularly at my age, sit up straight at a 90 degree angle, and try and then also row. You know, to have nothing to push off. I do not recommend it.
Yeah, for sure. I'm getting back to Salah. So just the whole Andrew Vorhees thing, like, you know, this is the guy who the Ravens really were excited and elated to get as late as they did last year. And who, like, I mean, it's rare you see a GM come out and a guy who's not taking a snap in the NFL, who's a year away from maybe even possibly contributing, saying that coming out and saying he's going to be playing some major football for us next year. I'm kind of paraphrasing, but it's pretty much what Eric Costa said. So, yes, Salah faces an uphill battle, but one edge he does have over Vorhees is that even though he didn't take a single snap in the regular season, he spent his entire rookie year on the active roster, learning, getting that development.
I I'm okay with the notion that Salah had development time, and I'm glad he made use of the time. I'm going to give you the counter to that. I'm going to say that Salah has to be significantly better than Vorhees this year because to win the job over him, because Vorhees has 4 years left with the Ravens and Salah only has three. And so any way you look at it, because of Vorhees' NFI designation last year, he still retains all 4 years of eligibility, whatever, first contract status is really the correct term. I don't see Salah winning this job over Vorhees. Vorhees already had a lot of technical soundness in his college career. And, I'm not going to say Salah was a bad player, but Salah was a legitimate sixth round pick. He's a guy who certainly is 34 and a half inch arms. If he had the feet, he'd be a left tackle prospect. He did play right tackle at Oregon. He's a guy who could have been a legitimate tackle prospect. The Ravens immediately moved him to guard. Not even a question of trying to keep him a tackle where they had a real need. They had a real need to tackle. And then, you know, whether you believe he was a second round pick or should have been a fourth round pick, and DaCosta has given a different opinion of where he thinks Vorhees would have been drafted last year, that he thinks he's a three or a four, but not a two. I think you still have to say Vorhees is clearly the better prospect with now still more sand in the hourglass.
Yeah, he's definitely the more refined guy, and like I said, less that you have to pour into as far as the technical development and refinement. You know, Salah still, even with a year of development, I still think he's probably the more, I mean, not probably, he's definitely the more raw prospect as far as, you know, his consistency in his hands and some of his footwork and stuff like that. But he has some good appealing strengths, too, that, you know, even – He may not necessarily, you know, like win a starting job this year, but like, you know, he's a guy that they're going to want to have around and that they really feel like they envision, like, you know, if we keep investing into this guy, albeit, you know, not at the cost of another position, like, you know, say they want to carry more corners or carry more safeties or carry, you know, you're going to have like, what, probably four running backs on the roster this year. And then Keaton Mitchell's going to have to come back at some point too. So you never know who might be that last guy who might get booted. He might make the initial 53-man roster, and then could, you know, get cut and signed to the practice squad at some other point. But he definitely has a chance.
Yeah. Well, I would agree with that. And I'm going to ask you to go deep into your crystal ball now. I know one thing we do with the expectation series, if folks remember, we talk about what's a good season for the player and what's a great season for the player. In our opinion for the coming season. And I use a 60th and 80th percentile of where I think the guy might end up, but use whatever definition you like. What to you is a good season for Saleh, given the very limited amount we know about him?
Making the team first and foremost. I mean, that's that, you know, making the team for the second year in a row would be a good season. And then, you know, sticking on as a reserve lineman, as a you know, maybe not necessarily a primary backup, but still, like, you know, having value as an additional lineman on the team who's active on occasional game day as the extra offensive lineman that teams are permitted to have. So this when they go from what, like 46 to 48, or yeah, just basically making the team and having a solidified spot on the depth chart.
Okay, I've got a similar thing to you. It's a very low bar. Makes the 53 and is available to contribute if the need arises, but not necessarily on the active roster every week. I think you said pretty much word for word that. Fills in above the replacement level and leaves us wanting to see if he can follow that trajectory as several past Ravens offensive linemen has been. And I think that's the key point for me is if he is asked to fill in, it might not be much. It might be what Ben Cleveland did last year. You know, 125, 150 snaps. And if he does that above the replacement level, I think there's still hope for him to be a Ravens project lineman who comes on in year three and four and is a player who can help them. I think he has to make good use of the year developmentally, both in terms of the practice and in realizing his potential in terms of functional strength. He may have gained a lot of that this last year. We didn't get to see. Okay, so we really don't know exactly where he is in terms of functional strength, but he's got to take advantage of the reps he does get in practice and really make himself a gym rat. Normally, I'm very much in favor of players getting offensive line coaching or positional coaching generally to improve their games from season to season. In his case, it's just as much about the workout stuff. It's just as much about the functional strength. So Yeah, that's where I am on Saleh. That's a 60% season. I don't think that's a gimme. I don't think it's an easy putt by any stretch. I think he's really going to have to work to be at above the replacement level when he is in there.
Well, yeah, speaking to the functional strength part, I mean, just based off the pictures and stuff I've seen, maybe just the extra facial hair he has, but he's looking like he's growing more into that grown man body. And I actually recently ran into his uncle at Costco, and he's telling me he's been putting in that work this offseason, getting swole. So it doesn't take much for Polynesians to put that muscle on once they get in the weight room.
That is very good to hear, by the way. That's very good to hear. It's nice that you ran into his uncle that way. Well, let's talk about what a great season is. What is a great season for Saleh this year?
A great season will be, you know, beating out Andrew Voorhees or even Ben Cleveland for one of those starting guard spots, or at least a primary backup spot. If he loses out, like say, like it goes down to the wire in the preseason and he loses out, but still solidifies the spot as the top, maybe swing guard at both spots. And that'd be a great season in my eyes, would be beating out one of those two guys. And if they can't beat him out, then at least be earning the primary backup swing guard spot.
Okay. I think that certainly would be a great season. I'm going to set the bar a little lower even for a great season for Saleh. Cause I just don't think it's realistic to hope that he's going to win the job. But I would say that he gets the left guard or right tackle role at some point during the season due to some combination of circumstances. It could be winning it, but I'm not demanding to be winning. It could be just a matter of injuries. But when he does play, he plays at the league average level. Now, that is a big, big swing for the fences to have him playing at the league average level at either left guard or right tackle, which I think are the two spots he's most likely. I don't think he's going to beat out Cleveland. Cleveland could get hurt, but I don't think he's going to beat out Cleveland for that right tackle, right guard spot. I think it's possible that we find some of the same things about Rosengarten, that he's not really ready to play this year in terms of functional strength. So I think it's possible the right tackle spot, he could be a guy who the Ravens have to turn to at some point this year, either due to injury or due to ineffectiveness of Rosengarten. I hope neither, but you know, if it happens, it happens. And then I think if he plays at the league average level, the expectation would be that we could project improvement going forward. And this might be a player who could help the Ravens in years 3 and 4.
Yeah. Sounds good.
All right, ready to move on to Kyle Hamilton?
Yes, sir.
All right, let's do it. It's kind of hard to set the bars for Hamilton, which we'll get to last year, but first team All-Pro in 2023, the Ravens' most versatile defender by a wide margin and is the league's best horizontal defender, as I see it. Takes away the strong side of the football field from the hash to the outer boundary. He's your guy. He takes away that side of the field, and that's something very special. And there's not another player in the league like him right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, if I was the quarterback, you know, like you got to envision if we're running a screen. Wait, where's 14 at? Yeah, kill. Let's switch the, you know, because that dude's like the ultimate screen killer. I mean, you go back to the Chargers game specifically. I don't know how many times he blew up Keenan Allen shedding the block, mm-hmm. Darius Guyton shedding the block, and just killing either at the line of scrimmage or in the backfield. So if I was opposing quarterback heading into 2024, and you got the Ravens on your schedule, and you guys, if you're like the Bengals or like the Chargers, somebody like that, if you're a screen heavy team, yeah, we're not running the screen to the 14 side. That dude would snuff it out real quick.
Yeah, find 14 on every play the way that Brady used to have 20 on his wristband.
Exactly.
All the time. Yeah, that's an interesting idea. I think, you know, at the very least, other teams are going to have to figure out, they're going to have to completely game plan to take Hamilton out of the plays when they want to run it to the strong side. And it probably does mean that they need to really consider reducing the number of strong side plays that they have just because of that. So it's a very good thing that's true. Now, part of that is our inference that Hamilton is going to be playing up close to the line of scrimmage again and in this nickel role. And I don't see that as a sure thing right now. In fact, I see it as one of the really big unanswered questions going into camp is, where's Kyle Hamilton going to play?
Yeah. And that's, I mean, most of my notes here are dependent on him being able to continue playing that hybrid nickel role. Everything's dependent on who's going to be the next Geno Stone or some kind of comparable. Like, in order for him to unlock the rest of the defense, he first has to be able to be freed up to unlock. Yeah. You know, so it's kind of like you need a key to unlock the key. You know, so like the Ravens need to find that third reliable safety that they can bring onto the field to fill in for Hamilton in the back end and to allow him to come down into the box and play in the slot or near the line of scrimmage. Because without that, I mean, the Ravens defense, I wouldn't say it's limited, because it's still going to be versatile because you got versatile players, but it won't be everything that it can be.
Right. Yeah, I agree completely. And they did not go out and find that safety. Now, they may have another plan in mind. It may be, hey, TJ Tampa is going to be a safety, or that may be that somebody else who's got, you know, really legitimate back end skills. Maybe they think some corners cover three abilities are going to transfer the way that Worley's did last year. Maybe Worley is coming back. Maybe they still have, you know, Jamal Adams is not really a fit for playing the back end. He in a lot of ways would be playing the same position as Hamilton did last year, which is, to me, would be a overlap of skill set to a degree that I really wouldn't be very excited about it. You know, they've got so many nickels right now, yeah, with Mollett, with Ardarius Washington, with the possibility of Humphrey moving inside. If it's Wiggins and Stevens on the outside, which I think is very reasonable, then Humphrey moving to the inside gives you a lot of the physicality that Hamilton gave you. But it means Hamilton plays the back end, and he's minimized in a certain way.
Yeah, and I don't know how much credence we should put into this, but almost every time Nate Wiggins is at the podium, he talks about playing a little bit of safety. Like, I'll play whatever they want me to play as long as it gets me on the field. And the fact that he said he's learning safety, I don't know how much credits we can put into them playing him at safety. I think he played like a handful of snaps at nickel or at safety in college, but it wasn't a whole lot. Luckily for the Ravens, like in the same way that like this year's Last year it was the oversaturation of veteran edge depth, right? You know, you had guys like Kyle Van Noy, Jadeveon Clowney, and all those guys waiting around until August and even later than that to sign. This year, that position, that surface, the oversaturated position, well deep into the summer, is luckily for them at safety. So it's kind of like the Ravens are doing things right now. They really want to give their young guys enough reps in these OTAs and see, like, are we going to have to go out and get a guy, you know, whether it's now at the onset of training camp, in the middle of training camp, towards the end of training camp, or even into the season. So I think they're really going to give these guys, like a Bo Braid and some of the other guys, Ardarius Washington and the such, every ample opportunity to a certain extent. Now, if the free safety starts flying off the board come late July, early August, they might be like, hey, man, we can't risk, you know, the structure of our defense on just, you know, on a hope and a prayer that Ardarius Washington is not only just going to stay healthy, but be a comfortable replacement for Geno Stone.
Right.
So it's really dependent on how the veteran safety market up to this point, it's been pretty mum. So, but there are plenty of guys on there who can come in and play that free safety role. And there are guys who I feel like might have to take, like, not just lesser money, but also maybe a reduced role. But playing a third safety in the Ravens defense, it's like playing a third safety in almost any other defense. You're basically a part-time starter because they want to use Kyle Hamilton in the versatile role. So maybe you could get a guy like an Eddie Jackson or a guy like a Tashaun Gibson or a guy like Ford from the Packers to come in and play that what's basically a part-time starting role. You're going to be playing at least that, what percentage of the snap at the
gym? Well, let's say 50, because I think, you know, that Mollett or a quote unquote real slot cornerback will be in there on a lot of passing downs where you put a third wide receiver in there. On 12 personnel downs, you definitely want Hamilton in there in a large role. And then on other downs where you have a big slot receiver in, you probably want him in there too, or sometimes on early downs anyway, if you're taking a chance against a different type of receiver there. But I'm with you. I think that there's a lot of opportunity there, and it's three players for two spots, and Hamilton is always going to be in there. So it's two players effectively sharing a spot, one being a traditional slot corner and one being a split field free safety.
Yeah. I mean, it really depends on Pepe. He's really going to have to stay healthy and show what he can do, because the Ravens, they're saying Marlette took a 2-year deal, so that he's going to be in their plans, you know, no matter what. He'd have to have a disastrous training camp preseason for them to be willing to move on from him after just signing him to that 2-year deal. So this is really make or break time for Pepe. And like I said, they are going to give these young guys ample opportunity, but they're not going to risk the viability of their defense moving forward this year, especially first year without Mike McDonald, Dak Orr's first year as a first-time play caller. You're not going to want to set him up for failure, or not necessarily failure, but not to be everything that he can be in year one of his tenure.
Yeah. Hamilton, you mentioned the plays against the Chargers. I thought the play against the Browns that was schemed up on the Njoku swing pass left. Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you, most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See home club for details.
Where he was off the line of scrimmage, tipped the ball to himself for an early pick six in that game in Baltimore. It's probably the defensive highlight of the year. The only other play that comes close to it for me is his getting chop blocked by a lineman, have a lineman fall on top of him.
His former teammate.
Yeah, and get up and still make the interception on the play after an extended play. Just absurdly ridiculous sequence of events.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad the Ravens came on top in that game because, like, up to that point, like you mentioned the Browns game, like Kyle Hamilton, some of Kyle Hamilton's best games of his career have came in Ravens losses. And that really chaps my ass because, like, you know, that Colts game, he had three sacks in the first half, could have had more in the second half, but they eventually got hit to the game. And then that Browns game where he had the pick six and he was all over the field. And then they lose both of those games. And like that, the Browns game was in overtime, but they lose a close game in overtime. And it just – I hate to see those kind of moments for him where it's like, oh, man, this is a Kyle Hamilton legacy game and then a loss. Because you can't have a legacy game and a loss.
Yeah, it is definitely true that Hamilton's big games have often come in losses. And he has had some bad games and losses too. We can't forget the Miami game in the second game of his career, and that didn't work out. But he's been one hell of a player since that game, since week two of 2022, Kyle Hamilton has been one of the best football players in the entire league. And let's say one of the best defenders, if we want to say it that way. But a very, I don't think that's an unfair comment at all. So downhill anticipation is still, you know, one of his top characteristics. He certainly is one of the best pass rushers, even though all of his pass rush events came in that half of football, and now he has to be schemed up for every time. He still got good pressure in his other pass rush attempts for the rest of the season, but that Colts game was something special.
Yeah, I just don't understand how you can miss somebody that big and long. Like, you know, if I saw this meme going on Twitter where, like, you see that thing, like it says, like, DBs on the edge on the corner blitz, and like this big condor kind of hopping towards the, and then that's kind of, somebody described it as Kyle Hamilton on the line of scrimmage. Like, how do you miss something that big and that long coming at you? But, you know, Gardner Mitchell didn't see him three times.
Yeah, he's on the front side. He was on the right side of the quarterback all three times, and nothing Minshew could do about it. 465 snaps at slot corner per PFF. Now, I don't have a number like that right on the money, but he also had 236 box snaps as well, the way they count it. Again, they do some funny things with their position counting, but I'm basically confident that's a realistic number that effectively played over half his snaps in the box or in the slot and about half his snaps, just a little bit shy in that nickel role. And that was despite a year where the Ravens were really frustrated in getting him the ability to move up front again. And it really, it underscored the need for the Ravens to have four safeties active on game day if you want to try and make three a regular occurrence on the field. And by the way, if they find that Simpson is not the guy they want on third down to be on the field, and they need to have a guy who comes in at dime back, it's going to be five to make four.
Yeah.
That I'm going to really need to see on game day.
Yeah. That's the guy. That's where a guy like Sanusi Kane, you know, he's a guy he's more of an ideal box safety, more so dime backer. Dime linebacker more so than to me when I saw it when they drafted him, okay, you got your dime backer there. Like I didn't even view him as a safety, and now I'm pretty sure he could have some ability. I know he's been making some plays in OTAs, but then just OTAs, we're in shorts weather right now. But he's a guy that could. That's why, like, when they brought in Jamal Adams, I'm like, well, if you bring in Jamal, why did you draft Sanusi Kane? Like this is a guy who's young, cost controlled, and can play that same role as that box, probably even better than Jamal Adams at this point in his career. You know, at this point in his career, I like Jamal Adams. I don't know. I'm kind of down on Jamal Adams. I know the Ravens have a good relationship with him, dating back to John Harbaugh. I said he coached him up in the Pro Bowl or whatever. But I just, he's a guy that I wouldn't say necessarily past his prime. It's just, I don't know.
I wouldn't have any problem saying that Jamal Adams is past his prime, no problem at all.
Because I hate bagging on guys that, you know, have like reoccurring injuries, right? Like they'll have a few injury riddled seasons, and then it kind of deteriorates their skill set. So you never know. Maybe he could have a renaissance year somewhere. Maybe if the Seahawks, he's been in contact with them, if they bring him back and he plays that kind of hybrid Kyle Hamilton esque role with the Mike McDonald's new defense, then you know, who knows? Maybe he could have a career resurgence. I just don't want to see it in Baltimore.
Okay, so you have slotted Kane in that dime role, and honestly, I don't see another easy way for him to get on the field either. I don't see him as a traditional strong safety. I see him as a dime and a special teams player. I think they got him for that in large part. And by the way, the price was right on a dime back at that spot in the seventh round. Six or seven is what Ozzie has always paid for a dime back, and it's worked out so well. And this was DaCosta's really first swing of this. Actually, that's not true, because Geno Stone was exactly that in 2019. He was really a split field safety. I would have been happier if they had another Geno Stone to pick from. You don't always have good control groups in football, as I say. In this case, I don't know of a guy that they really liked. I kind of hope that Harbaugh would have found a small school guy that might have fit their needs there, a guy who, you know, left behind by the transfer portal system, never really got picked up for some reason, but the Ravens like him. To me, Ardarius Washington, Kane, Braid, none of them are going to be good split field guys. Washington has tackling issues that go beyond the ability to play over the top, which he doesn't really have a lot of experience at the NFL level. Kane and Braid, I don't think either of them have the speed or instincts to be the guy on the back end. So while I think Braid, either of them could be a dime back, and I think Bo Braid is a good UDFA selection, a good guy to have around on your roster to try and get him into some role, I don't think he's the natural split field choice. So here's the question. Do you re-sign Daryl Worley? Or are you even a little bit surprised that so far they have not re-signed Daryl Worley?
I am surprised Daryl Worley's not back on this roster. He's the guy that they do the roster yo-yo gymnastic things with so long. And then when he made that transition to safety, he actually played expectation. Yeah, played well. I thought he would have been a shoo-in, you know, especially given these new special teams rules. And it seems like, I don't know, like maybe they're just waiting around on it and giving those young guys reps. He might be one of those guys that they bring in towards the, you know, beginning or end of training camp, just because they know that he's a guy that's going to stay in shape and you know, be available for them. Who knows? But I just, for me, I just envision the Ravens making a signing at the free safety spot, because you can't just say, oh, we need somebody to play at Geno Stone role, because part of the Geno Stone role isn't just coming in on those downs when Kyle Hamilton needs to be play hybrid. It's also backing up Marcus Williams.
Yeah,
a guy who's struggled with injuries since he came to Baltimore. Unfortunately, you know, because he didn't have any injury problem before he came to the Ravens. I don't know what it is about some of the Ravens franchise agents that come here and immediately start having injury woes, but it is what it is. But you need somebody that can not just play that Geno Stone role as a third safety, but also be your backup free safety in a pinch.
Yeah, I mean, I'm completely with you on that, by the way. They really do need another free safety, period. As much as you don't want to move Hamilton to even a split field strong role, you really, really do not want to force Hamilton into a free safety role. So his instincts are very good. So there's things he can do on the back end that would really help you, but it would very much minimize who he is as a football player if he has to play center field. I don't think it's the ideal spot for him, and that would be unfortunate if it were forced to happen. So anyway, they need to find that split field guy who can maximize Hamilton's value. I think we've harped on it enough that we don't need to continue. I did want to give you a few stats, though, about Hamilton this last year, because he's pretty freaking amazing when it comes right down to it. 4.3 yards per target. And I'm looking at that and thinking, that's the statistic he's got that I think is completely not duplicatable. If he did, it's going to mean he's well on track for the Hall of Fame. Let's put it that way. And it's a little early to be talking about that. Maybe guy wins his first team All-Pro in year two. It's not too early to be talking about it. If he were to repeat basically that 4.3 yards per target, I think he is well on his way to being a Hall of Famer. I certainly hope he does it in a Ravens uniform.
Yeah, so like, I mean, under my weaknesses thing, I was like, sitting there pondering all the quote. Nobody's perfect, but he's pretty damn close and still ascending. So it's just when you look at his metrics across the board, I mean, like for as far as what would a good season look like, rinse and repeat, man. I mean, you almost can't get no better than that. He's a guy that you can't. There aren't too many holes you can poke in this game.
You know, you kind of contradicted yourself there, which I should just let you go on, but I want to point out it because I think it's an important point. Lamar Jackson won the MVP in his second year. There was no going up from that season he had in 2019. It's one of the greatest seasons in NFL history. I would look at this last season for Kyle Hamilton and say it is so great a season. Duplicating it meets my definition of probably beyond the 80th percentile at this point. So it would be such an extreme outlier. So the point I want to make is that you said he's still ascending and whatnot. I'm not sure there's any further for him to ascend to. I mean, I look at his yards per target. It's not duplicatable. The 58.4 opposition passer rating. Don't know if that's duplicatable. Could he do better as a pass rusher? Well, maybe give something else up. He had 40 stops and 12 missed tackles. Maybe he could get a little bit better in terms of missing a few less tackles, but I'm really nitpicking because, you know, four less missed, let's say cuts his missed tackles by a third. Is that as important as having, you know, a few extra PDs? No, it's not. And I have a hard time, you know, figuring out how he's going to become, and for him to, you know, take a step forward, he's got to all of a sudden become Ed Reed.
Yeah, I don't know, Ken. I'm just like, for a guy who's only just turned 23 in March, I'm just like, this guy's not even fully developed as a man yet. And we're talking about a guy who's still developing, this, not just in his body, but his frontal lobe. This is a guy who can get smarter, guy who can get faster, guy who can get even bigger. And so it's just like, not only is he still growing, you know, physically and maturing physically, is there another level of his game that he can take it to? I couldn't imagine anything better than what he did last year, but you never really know.
All right. Well, fair enough. So let's get right down to it. What's a good season for you for Kyle Hamilton?
Oh yeah. The one I alluded to earlier, it's kind of, you know, like rinse and repeat to 2023 or as close to as possible.
Okay. So I say plays as needed at free safety, strong safety and slot corner. I think that's first of all, the most important thing. Wherever the Ravens need Kyle Hamilton to play, he's got to be able to do it, even though it's probably going to really piss us off if he's forced into a lot of strong safety, and it's really going to be a disaster if he's forced into playing a lot of free safety. So wherever they need him, though, he's got to be able to play there, even dime back if that's where they want him. But I would fear that a good season would include a lack of other complementary pieces forcing him into more back-end play than we'd otherwise be okay with. He's forced into some minimization of his impact on the football game by the lack of the complementary safeties. I want to talk about one other with you after we're done with here too, but we'll let that rest for a moment. I think he falls short of his 2023 season in terms of big plays and visible impact on the defense, even with a good season, but opposing offensive coordinators still have to figure out how to scheme against him every single week. So that's part of the reason why he just won't duplicate the season is they're going to be avoiding him. You know, the kind of plays like the play that happened against the Browns, they're going to be working so hard to make that not happen that I think they're going to be very effective opposing offensive coordinators that try to figure out how to get around him. Now, the good news is the rest of the Ravens defense should really benefit from that.
Yeah, and that kind of interludes into my great season is that guys around him have career years because opposing teams are trying to avoid him. So he may not necessarily repeat the All-Pro, you know, season that he had a year ago. But if you got guys like Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Williams and other guys in the back end, or even at the intermediate level, guys like Roquan Smith and Trent Simpson having career years because of all the attention that 14 is getting, that to me is a great season.
Yeah, now I go along with you on that entirely. I actually like yours better, but I'll read mine verbatim since that's what we're doing here. The Ravens find the missing complementary piece needed for a 2023-esque flexibility with lots of slot corner play, and he essentially duplicates his outstanding 2023 season with regular splash plays, whether or not that results in the postseason honors he got last year. So, does he go to the Pro Bowl? I think that certainly should happen. Does he make All-Pro one? It might not. There might be somebody else who comes along, has a bigger year, more flashy numbers. The voters are fickle. PFF.
Javon Holland is probably going to be a guy who's going to be in contention with him for that. Holland's kind of banged up last year, but he played a similar role, and he's going to be playing for Anthony Weaver in a Ravens-esque defense. So he might be the guy that might, you know, might be him and Kyle Hamilton for as far as first team, second team, All-Pro, strong safety.
There's a possibility, and there's certainly other guys from this class, even though there were not a lot of great safeties in this draft class. There's always the possibility that another guy puts up a big interception total and all of a sudden is valued. It's just the things Hamilton does in terms of visible plays have been so remarkable in his first 2 years, even though it's not always interceptions. You know, it's sacks, it's tackles, it's blowing up screen plays, it's getting by any blocker who tries to take advantage of him on the strong side. He's so special that he should have a lot of highlight plays, even if they're not turnovers.
Yeah. I mean, it's so rare to see a guy with his athleticism skill set and then also willingness to just like run through somebody's face. I mean, not just the way he sheds blocks, he'll go under you, he'll go around you, and sometimes he'll just go right through you. He's he's that strong and that powerful and that explosive of an athlete that he can do all the above.
He uses his length certainly very well and is extremely slippery, whether he's a pass rusher or somebody that's somebody's trying to block in space, whether that's a lineman, a pulling lineman, or a unfortunate slot wide receiver who has to try and block him.
Yeah.
Oh, let me throw this is the Hail Mary idea that could potentially be something that would get Hamilton into more of that slot role this year. Now the Ravens have, I would not call it an embarrassment of riches at corner. But they do seem to have three corners plus another developmental guy. And I'm not considering Wiggins developmental. He's a first-round draft pick. He's got to get on the field right away. But TJ Tampa is more of a developmental guy. He was my number six corner overall. I think if the Ravens had to make him their third corner, I don't think they would lose out from that, meaning third outside corner. I think that's what he starts the season. No, that's not true. I don't think they'd have a problem if they made him in the third outside corner. So you probably see what I'm building up to here, because it's in two guys I could move to free safety in this situation. And number one is Brandon Stevens, who has some experience playing safety, but had a good year at right corner last year. And I think Stevens probably really does not want to move again, given he's up for a contract. He's just played well at right corner. I would be shocked if he were okay with moving anywhere else on the football field, particularly the safety.
He talked about it today at podium at OTAs. He talked about, like, they haven't asked him to do that in OTAs yet this year, but he's always open to doing whatever. I mean, guys going to say that, and a lot of that's lip service, yep. You know, but, like, a lot of times, like, he brought himself at corner. He's a corner, you know, but he said if they need me to play it in the bench, I'm willing to play it in the bench. But I feel like I put myself at corner. So he's a guy that wants to stay at corner, is going to break the bank at corner. And, you know, like, any team that tries to sign him as a safety, which they won't, but like any team that tries to, you know, like lower his value, if anything, that increases his value. The fact he can play safety and be a lockdown corner.
Yeah, but it's a fool's errand. If they run him out of there at safety, it will hurt his value. He just doesn't have enough time at corner. So if he were suddenly to legitimately move to safety from corner this year, people would be talking to him and say, look, you got what, a season and a half, season and a quarter total at cornerback? And this is what we're looking at. I mean, yeah, you were good in 2023. 2024, they moved you to safety because all three of the other guys were better. I can't see that helping his value. So I do think they leave him there anyway, because I think he's one of their three best, and he's probably even their best guy going into the season. Even with Wiggins here, he's probably their best. And Humphrey is the guy that I think you could move to safety, and it might even be getting to that point in his career. Very physical player, good tackler, and a guy who has played plenty of decent cover three. Now, he's a good press man corner. I don't want to say he's not that. But he's more of the characteristics in terms of tackling than you could get out of a Marcus Peters in that position, who'd have been, I think, a great safety in terms of the ball hawking component. But it would have been, I think that a player like Humphrey might give you the maximum flexibility for Hamilton and also really provide value at that second safety spot.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely an interesting thought, just given that, you know, like, Marlon has played a versatile role in his defense before. I mean, some of his best years have come when he split time in the slot. Now, is he going to take snaps away from Mollett and Hamilton? They'd probably prefer not. And his best position right now is probably still at still at outside corner. Well, who knows what they're going to experiment with come training camp, you know, especially if, you know, if they want to, you know, like, because I don't think they have a whole lot of cap flexibility right now. You can always do some restructuring and stuff like that with some guys. They don't think they restructured Mark Andrews or Lamar Jackson yet this offseason. So those could be avenues they can use to create cap to sign a veteran safety. But I feel like the longer these veteran guys sit on the open market, the lower the price is going to be. You're going to get guys for peanuts like you did Clowney and yeah, I don't think you're going to get Justin Simmons for peanuts, you know, unless he really, really wants a ring and feels like Ravens give him his best chance. I highly doubt it, no matter what Bleacher Report says. But anyways, I envision there are guys out there that can fill that role for the Ravens. And if not, if they want to, you know, not want to touch Lamar or Mark's contract and want to see if Humphrey can make that transition or at least play it in a part-time role, I'd be all for it.
I would too. And I think Van Noy was a guy who reportedly was very expensive during the offseason. And then they were able to get for, I think the vet minimum this last year, or not much over it anyway. So anyway, I'm not sure even Justin Simmons is guaranteed a really good contract. I'm also not sure Justin Simmons is exactly the back end split field guy I want. He's got terrific, strong safety, Hamilton-esque qualities of, like, he's a lesser Hamilton in terms of his ability to come up and play in the box and play closer to the line of scrimmage. I don't see him as the great split field guy. Now, that doesn't mean I don't think he'd be pretty good in that role. I don't see him as being the missing puzzle piece that exactly fits.
Yeah, to me, my two ideal guys would be Eddie Jackson or Deshaun Gibson, somebody mm-hmm. who can come in and play that split safety role and back up Marcus Williams.
Yeah. All right. Outstanding. Always great talking football with you, Josh. Appreciate you coming on the show as always. And tell people where they can find your work now.
Well, you can find all my Ravens coverage at BaltimoreBeatdown.com. I try to churn out as much, you know, daily, if not every other day, content over there. And I've worked full-time for Anchorage Daily News up here in Anchorage, Alaska, covering a myriad of sports from high school to pros. We got some Alaskans in the NBA and NFL now. So, you know, and NHL, Jeremy Swayman for the Boston Bruins and Alyssa Peely for the WNBA. And we got quite a few guys in the NFL now, including Salah, who we just talked about tonight. So, you know, I cover a myriad of things for Anchorage Daily News too.
All right. Outstanding, Josh. Great to have you back as usual. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, still recording some recollection series this offseason. I'm going through the expectation series and working on that. If you have a strong desire to be on the expectation series, hit me up right away, because I'm down to only a few pairings that are left unclaimed. And I would not want to see you miss out if it's something you really want to do. Josh, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, like always, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab. Also, on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.